We're going to start. Today I want to talk about the Aron Kodesh and the dangers of interacting with the Aron Kodesh. As you all know, Bamidbar talks about Bamidbar discusses the counting of the Jewish people, the census, the division of the camp. But towards the end of the parsha, the parsha turns to the job of the Levim. And the responsibility of the Levim, their job in the Beit HaMikdash, or in the Mishkan, was to transport the Mishkan. Okay? So let's just start. If you look at Perek Dalet. Okay, we did counting last year or 2 years ago. So we're going to start with the job of the Levim, and then we're really going to focus on the end of the parsha, the very, very end, and a few psukim, and then some midrashim, and a story. Oh, the cake is chalavi, and it's courtesy of Rina. Thank you, Rina. Yeah, it's more complicated than it's worth going into. Okay.
In short, I made a mahadran cake and then spread it. The spreading is milk, so it's not mahadran. And I checked that afterwards, and it's not allowed in Pakistan. So
you're all the beneficiaries. His birthday was on Pesach. He's celebrating. That kid has more birthdays this year. First he had English birthday, then Hebrew birthday, now Gan birthday. Okay. Vayderashem Moshev, Yalla Ramli Mar. Perek Dali. Naso et Rosh B'nei Kehat Mitoch B'nei Levidim Mishpachotan Levit Avotam. Perek Dali, Pasuk Alek. Beginning Perek Dali. Raise up the heads of the B'nei Kehat, the children of Kehat, from the children of Levi. Now remember, in Levi, there were three families, Gershon, Kehat, and Merari. Right, Kehat. We'll see. We're talking about Kehat now. Miven Shloshim Bashana V'Mal V'Chabishim Shana, from the year age of 30 to 50. Kol Balat Sava Laso Melacha Ba'ol Moed. Okay, whoever Balat Sava in Kehat, his job was the service of Kehat was this service. Remember, the Bnei Levi, children of Levi, did not fight in the army, but they had service in the Mishkan, the Beit Hamikdash. Zot Avodah Bnei Kehat Ba'ol Moed Hakodesh Hakadoshim. This is their job. Okay, pasuk hey, uba aron ubanav, vitzoh hamachane. So, what was the job of Kehat? Basically, the job of Kehat. Yeah, we're in Bamidbar. We moved on. Okay, the job of Kehat. Okay, vitzoh hamachane when the camp was traveling. Aron would come. Vehoridu et parochet hamasach, and they would take down the parochet of covering. V'chisuba et Aron Haidut. And they would use it to cover the Aron Haidut. V'natnu alav, and they will place upon it, kisui or tachash, some kind of skin, the skin of the tachash, they would place upon it a kisui, a covering. U'parshu beget kalot techelet mimala v'samu badav. And then they would place upon it a beget kalot techelet, a techelet, a blue techelet covering above it. And then they would put the badim, they would put the poles on it. Very nice. And then they would carry, then Kehat would come and carry the Aron HaKodesh. So who was covering the Aron? Before the Bnei Kehat could carry it. Who did the job of covering it? Aron HaBanav. The Kohanim did the job of covering it. And then we'll see the Kohanim also did the job of covering also. It's like a very interesting thing. Like you almost know, it's a very interesting thing to see that the moving or the movers, right, is a very specific process of how the moving was done. The Kohanim came, they would dismantle the Mishkan, they covered over all the Kalim of the Mishkan, and only then could the brutes, the Levim come and schlep, right? The schleppers come and schlep. Okay? We're going to skip now. So they covered all the stuff, blah, 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 blah. Okay. Skip to Pasuk Tet Vav, 15. Verse 15, chapter 4, verse 15. V'chila Aharon uvanav lechasot et hakodesh ve'et kol klei hakodesh minsoa hamachane. Aharon would complete or finish. The Kohanim would finish covering all the klei hakodesh. Ve'achrichein, afterwards, yavo v'nei kehat laseit. They will come to carry. V'lo yig'u el hakodesh v'ameitu. And they shall not touch the kodesh. Okay?
Lest they die.
V'ameitu, lest they die. Look at Rashi. What is the Kodesh? What was it that they might come to touch? Rashi. Lo yavlu ve'et kol klei hakodesh lechasot et hakodesh ha'aron ve'et hamizbeach ve'et kol klei hakodesh ha'menorah ve'klei sharet va'metu she'im yigu Chayavin mita bidei shamayim. If they touch what? All the kelim. Are we familiar with right? Are we familiar with a okay? Are we familiar with a concept of them people being chayav mita for touching? For touching any of the other kelim, we think it sounds like we're familiar with the Aron. What does Rashi seem to imply? Rashi seems to imply the Mizbeach, the Menorah. It's interesting. Okay? Very, very curious. The Chayav Mita B'dei Shamayim for touching. Upkudat, we're going to continue. Upkudat Elazar bin Aron HaKohen, Shemen HaMa'or, and the Aron was in charge of the Shemen, Uktor Tasamim, Ominchat Tamid, Veshemen HaMishcha. Which is very interesting. Like it's a movable Beit HaMikdash. So how do you, on the one hand, have a Beit HaMikdash that you treat with the ultimate of sanctity, but at the same time, it's something that's like a mitzvah tank. You know what I'm saying? But how do you maintain that level of sanctity?
You're not allowed to touch anything inside.
How do you move it without touching it?
Right. You're touching the external. You've covered it, and
you're only touching the poles, right? Each one had a pole. It's interesting. They made them transportable, but it's that you have to move it, but you can't touch it. I mean, the thing itself. So you have to transport it with the utmost of care, and it behooves you to do so because you'll die. Okay. Yud Zayin. What?
This is like a nuclear weapon.
No, worse. Nuclear weapon, you touch it, you can't touch it.
If you're close.
Oh. I mean, this is a toxic. You know? Instant. Well, I don't know if it's instant. Sometimes we're going to see. Al tachritu et shevet mishpachot ha-kehati mitoch ha-leviim. Al tachritu. Achrit, what is karet? To cut off, to destroy. Do not destroy. Okay? The shevet of the tribe of the Kehati from the Levim. Why? How? How would that happen? How would it happen that they would become destroyed?
If they touched it.
So why don't you just say, don't touch it? Well, we're going to ask that question. I just did ask that question. V'zot asu lahem. V'chayu v'lo yamutu. B'yishtam l'kodesh ha-kadashim. This you should do for them. And they will live and not die when they approach the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Aaron uvanav yavou. Aaron and his children will come. V'samu otam ish ish al avodato v'al masa'o. And you should place them, each person, on his work and on his burden, on his carrying. V'lo yavou lirot kivala et hakodesh v'ametu. And they shall not come lirot to see Kevala et hakodesh v'metu. I don't even know what that means. Kevala, what is livloa?
To swallow
that which is holy, and they shall die. So first of all, we have a very simple question. These last three psukim are problematic, and many, all the mefarshim deal with it. I just want to share with you. A bunch of this shir comes from some combination of Nachshoni and Nechama. Right, so I looked it up, so you can look it up. She deals with a lot of these issues, if you want to, in her studies on the Parsha. Okay? So, we're stuck with trying to understand two things. A, what is the meaning of Pasuk Chaf? V'lo yavo'u lirot, that we understand. They should not come to see Kivala et HaKodesh. Well, Kivala, when the holy is swallowed, somehow, Vametu, and then they'll die. So then my simple question is, after I understand what that means, what does he want? What's the command, right? Aber Hashem and Moshe v'al Aron lemor. Al tachritu.
Do not cut them off. He's putting a getter on it.
What is it? What does he want?
Look at it.
What?
You shouldn't even look at
it. You shouldn't look at it?
The Aaron and his sons should cover it so that they shouldn't even get a chance to.
So what's punishable by death?
Touching it. Because if you even see it, you're going to be like swallowed up that you won't have a choice but to touch it.
Ah, so you're saying, right, it's not, is it usher to see or usher to touch? It's usher to touch, but if you look at it, then you'll come to touch it. So therefore Hashem says to, for them to
cover it.
Cover it. But the covering was at the beginning of the parasha.
Is it
What do you mean?
Or moksa.
Don't look and you won't touch?
Oh, like moksa, right?
And cover it up.
What?
And cover it up.
Well, we always cover that, which is holy.
Right.
Right? We do. Yeah.
Does it only apply to kahatis, to his family?
It sounds like b'nei kahat. Mishpachot kahati mitoch halavim. Right? It was particularly
so
dangerous to the people of kahat.
All the
oh, I mean, why did they die? Yes.
They've still got them somewhere in the Vatican or in the wherever.
Whatever, right.
They're still going strong.
Well, okay, yes.
So that's what I'm asking.
You should know, by the way, they're on the Arc de Triomphe in Paris. There's a relief of the Rome. Isn't it in the Arc de Triomphe somewhere in Paris, I think? There's a relief.
Titus's Arch, sorry.
Of the menorah. And they do big, there's huge studies. Sorry, I should have had this. There's huge studies, like academic studies, because it doesn't entirely match with the way Chazal described the base of the menorah. Was it a triangle base? And according to Chazal, it was a square base. So, like, is it real? Is it really real? Did they really take it? Did they not really take it? What's not in that picture? What is not in that picture? The Aron is not in the picture. They have Chatzotro, the menorah. Why? Why is the Aron not in the picture? What? Right, there's something in my mind. Right, it's in a warehouse in Washington. Something in my mind tells me that, I think I heard a midrash somewhere, that they hid the Aron. The Aron was hid, was put away. And it makes sense, because you could build everything else. You can't, what? What do you mean with Harsinai?
Harsinai
is
also hidden.
A lot of stuff is hidden, right? We don't know where it is. And we'll find it when the time comes.
But the
time is right, we'll get it.
But the Kalim were taken.
Yes. But you can make them again. You don't need that arrow. You don't need that menorah. Okay, let's go back to it. What can't they see? Lo yavo liro. Let's look at that. We're going to look at some different profession. And we're going to try to understand what exactly, right, what was the Torah prohibiting, or what was God commanding Aaron to do? Al tachwitu. So what do you want from it? Okay, and what exactly happened? Okay, so first let's look at Rashi. V'lo yavo'u lir'ot lashon nirtak v'toch nartek shalom. I'm sorry, kevala at hakodesh v'toch nartek shalom. When the holy is swallowed up into its nartek, into its package, into its shipping box. Kemoshe b'Rashi d'mal v'parsha zo. Upershu alav beged ploni, bechisu oto b'michse ploni, ubalu ashelo, hu kisuyo. So what does it mean? V'lo yavo lirot kivala et hakodesh.
The covering swallowed.
Right. They shall not come. Rashi says simply, they shall not come to see when the holy item
is
swallowed up by its cover. Okay. Very nice shot. Makes sense. Except,
doesn't sound like the threat.
Kivala et hakodesh, right? When the holy is swallowed up, yeah. It's difficult for us to understand. Okay, I mean Rashi. Look, Rashi. Do you guys have uncles? He says, "V'lo ya'alun lemechazeh." You shall not see it. Kad mechasan, yatmane kedusha. When they are covering the items of kedusha. So Rashi is simply following the basic translation of kivala et hakodesh, right? When it's being swallowed up. But there are other explanations instead. I think I saw Rabbi Nechayim. One second. Let's see if we can find it. Kivalat HaKodesh. Okay. 1 second.
Is there anywhere else in the Torah that talks about something like this? Holy being swallowed up.
Holy being swallowed up. So I saw, I'll read you Ramban. He says, what is Kivalat HaKodesh? Kasher Yusar HaBinyan Me'al Aharon. Remember, they're not just taking out the covering of the Aharon, they're removing the whole building. So, like, the holiness is being swallowed, I guess, into the Aron in a sense, right? And you're like, when you're transporting the presence of God, right? The building represents something. So the holiness is being swallowed up. Yishalom v'la Hashem v'lo chamal. Okay. 1 second. V'od yasireim. It's a warning. Shelo yavo lirot klal hasarat habinyan. They should not see. The the disassembly of the building. Be'od shiorid Aaron et hakol et haparochet. When Aaron is still removing the parochet. Okay? Ve'aval tam ha-katuv ki ba'avor hayot kvod yoshev ha-kruvim sham. When the Yoshev Kruvim, what's the Yoshev Kruvim? Who is the Yoshev Kruvim? He was dwelling on the Kruvim when he's there. Who's Haru Alevim Shlo Yiharsu Lirot et Hashem Ach Yoridu Akahonim et Aparochet. Remember, right? The Kodesh HaKadashim was such that even Aaron wasn't allowed to go into it. So if they were to go and see it, they would be seeing, in a sense, the presence of God. So what was swallowing up the Kodesh? The Aaron was swallowing up this holiness of God. I saw a very similar pshat in Rabbeinu Bechaya. He says that somehow the presence, the Shekhinah of God, dwelled on this Aaron. And when they would move, when they would travel, then the Shekhinah would return to the Anan. So the Levim were not permitted to view, to witness, to see this Shekhinah somehow. Because if you did, they would die. Okay, so now I have a question. What was the Aaron supposed to do? Was it simply a warning to cover the Aaron? Was this God's commandment? Just make sure you cover it well?
No.
Why? Why do you say that?
Because he told him he has to tell them how to do their job too.
Where? What are you talking about? Let's go back. 1 second. This commandment, Al Tachrit Veshev Mishmachot Tekati. Just tell me in like a sentence, what is God commanding Aaron, Moshe and Aaron to do? Don't get them killed. So therefore, what?
Follow these steps.
What?
The step-by-step process.
Yeah, but didn't God already tell them to do it? Cover the Aaron? This is the problem. If the whole point is, like Rashi's saying, just make sure you cover it. Kadosh Baruch Hu already told him to make sure to cover it.
It seems also a very complicated way of just saying that.
Right.
I think swallowing.
Right. Make sure you do your job. Okay? I mean, that's what you want to say. But it seems like there's something more involved. So I want to share with you a couple of...
It's not me.
Like, you made me nervous. Like,
what?
It's okay, thank you.
Smart.
Yeah, thank you.
Oh.
Thank you for clarifying. Okay. So the Midrash says the following. There's a couple of very similar Midrashim. Ma ra'a HaKadosh Baruch Hu lahasir al mishpachot haikahati Yoter Mishar Mishpachot. Okay? He says, why was God warning more about Kahati than the other families? So we don't have this about Gershon, we don't have it about Merari, we only have it about Kahati. Okay? So the Gemara says the following, the Midrash says the following. Okay? Shaya Shevet Levi, Me'uli Mikol HaShvatim. Shevet Levi was above all of the Shvatim. Okay? And Kahat was above all of them. Okay. Right? Okay, so he says. One second. He says, the Midrash says two following things. One opinion of the Midrash says that the Bnei Kehat, because of the danger of the Aaron involved, he says, what would you rather choose? Meaning, they say, okay, everybody, we've got 10 jobs to do. Someone's got to carry the beams, someone's got to carry the board, someone's got to carry the menorah, someone's got to carry the mizbeach, someone's got to carry the Aaron. Which one would you rather have?
The least dangerous.
Exactly. So the Midrash says that the Bnei Kehat would run to do the other thing. And since they would run to do the other thing, right? That could be, if you're running away from the Aaron, that's a desecration of the Aaron. He says, and that's punishable by death. Can you imagine? Like, they're all running to do the job, and nobody wants to do the hardest job. Nobody wants to do the most dangerous job, but that's a desecration of the Aaron. That's one position. Another opinion says, Davar Acher, Chas v'shalom, Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachman Amar, God forbid, lo yu b'nei kahat minichim et Aaron. Okay, so God forbid, there's no way you could say that they would abandon the most significant thing. Ella, afal pisha mitma'atim, even though it was dangerous and people were dying, hayu nodnim nafshan al Aaron. They wanted to go and carry the Aaron. Vimkein, lama mazir alim al tekritu et hasheva. So if so, why is the Torah warning us? What's the warning for? Mimnei shahayu yudim, shekol shekol misha to'en ba'aron scharo meruba. Everyone who carries the aron has great reward. V'hayu minichim et ha'shulchan v'amenorah v'kulam rotzin litol schar. So they would go, right? And it's the exact opposite opinion. Not that they were running away from the menorah, from the aron. They were running to the aron. And, mitoch zeh hayu noagin b'kalut rosh. I'm sorry. Mitoch kach, zeh haya meriv v'omer. So then we'd get into fights. Right? And say, anito inkan. V'zeh meriv v'omer, anito inkan. I got here first. I got here first.
Like my kids.
Mitoch kach, hayu noagin b'kalut rosh. They would get into arguments. They would get into, they would not have the right state of mind. Vaita shchina pogat b'hem. And the shchina was pogea b'hem. It said, you know, you're going to be, this is the way you're going to act around my Aron Brit HaKodesh? Sorry. Amar Elokim Moshe said, God, asei lehem takana shlo yitkalu meha'olam. You make them a takana, so they should not be destroyed. Ela yisadru otam al avodatam ve'al masa'am. So he says, the commandment was, I want you to put everything in order. I want you to set a list. You get to go now, you get to go now, you get to go now. Why? Because otherwise, if it wasn't that way, everyone's going to fight. Everyone fights, kalut rosh, and a terrible thing's going to happen. Okay, so when the Gemara says, al tachriti v'tshev mishpachot ha'ke'ati, it was an additional commandment to set aside a certain seder, a certain hierarchy. Okay, this family goes on that day, that family goes on that day, and then they switch, because everybody wanted to do the right thing. I think the Midrashim are fascinating, because these two Midrashim, they have two diametrically opposite positions. According to one position, everybody's running away from the most dangerous, most important thing. And according to another position, everybody's running to the most dangerous, most important thing.
And they're both problematic.
What's that?
And they're both problematic.
And they're both problematic.
There's no win situation.
So when you see Midrashim like that, I think, to me, what's a Midrash? Midrash is a comment, very often. It's not just a historical analysis of what happened, right? It's a historical analysis of what happened, not in the time of the Midbar, of the desert. It's a historical analysis of what's happening in the time of the author of the Midrash. So, Shul, you know, this is a great job for a shul. Exactly, it was a great job for a shul rabbi, right? What? Right. So, but it describes two different, but equally troubling phenomena that you'll see. Okay, shul elections are coming up, so you'll see one of two possibilities, and you won't see in the middle. You'll very rarely see in the middle. Possibility one:
everybody wants to be president.
Nobody wants to be president.
Right.
And then possibility two:
no one
wants to be president. That's exactly right. Everybody wants to be president. I want the covered. I want all the rest. I want, you know, everybody to, I want to have control. I want everybody to listen to me. That's one possibility. A possibility too, who needs the trouble? Who needs the agnos nefesh? Who needs the, and in each case, right, the way I see it, when the chazal, when Meshmuel Ma'anachmeni came along, right, and he says, like, there's no way, it's not possible. He said the problem was, what happens when everybody wants to be president? What kind of fighting?
Infighting.
Right. It isn't, you don't get, well, let's have a, you know, logical debate about the merits of each individual person in our platform to make the shul a better place. Right. Halavai. You know what I'm saying? But it never gets to that. It's always much more, how should we say it? This way the Gemara says it. Hayu noagin b'kalut rosh. Right, they're not always these things. These desire for control, even in Kodesh, is not always the most appropriate.
Right?
It's dangerous.
We're talking about this kind of. We go through this every week at our Shabbos table. Who's sitting where? Who's sitting next to which parent?
Oh, we do that. We solve that problem. We just switch off.
Yeah, we also do that.
Because
there's.
What do you mean?
You only switch off because you got to move the seats next to the parent, but then you got all the other seats. So.
Really? So then do it in a rotation. Yeah? It's like a lazy Susan. Yeah. Okay. And then obviously the other problem is, the first midrash, they're all running away from the hard job. And that you can all readily understand. But what happens when everybody runs away from the hard job? Nobody wants to be the president. Nobody wants to take the achrayu. Right? And in a sense, it's a dangerous job. Because there's no thanks. You know? But somebody has to do it. Because without somebody taking the responsibility, and you have nothing, you have no leadership, you have no Aron Kodesh, which is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to do. So I thought these two midrashim, I thought it's a very beautiful idea. If they're both human nature, they both happen all the time, and it's never like, well, we're all going to have a rotation, you'll take your turn, I'm going to take our turn. So maybe it's a good idea. So that's what the commandment was from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that in Avodat HaKodesh, right, you need to have a balance. You need to have a rotation. You need to have set responsibilities and a shifting responsibilities over time. But everybody understands that they have to do their part. I thought it was a very, very nice idea. Okay. No question? Somebody had a question? Okay. This idea of Kalut Rosh, of lightheadedness. So I saw, 1 second, I think it was Rav Hirsch. Rav Hirsch says, it's very interesting, he says, V'lo lir'ot kevala et ha-kodesh v'meitu. It should not come to see kevala et ha-kodesh, when the holiness is being swallowed up, and they shall die. What's the problem with seeing, with visual? So Rav Hirsch says, very beautiful idea. He said there was a danger in the Mishkan. And the danger in the Mishkan is the Mishkan, on the one hand, was externally very beautiful and very powerful and very aesthetically motivating. And it's supposed to be that way. But the danger is that the aesthetic, the external, has the power to become the focus as opposed to the internal. And then people begin to think more about the ritual itself than the meaning behind the ritual. What's that? Let's talk about Avodat Hashem. I mean, externals are always a problem. But even in Avodat Hashem, you know, and they're warned about that. You bring korbanot, you bring sacrifices, and it becomes so dangerous. You know what I'm saying? The people say, oh, I brought my sacrifice. I must say, it happens to all of us vis-a-vis davening. Like, you know, I'm davening Shemoneh Esrei this morning, and at about, I would say, Malshinim or Al Tzadikim, like I realized, I'm not really sure I've said anything today. Why? I don't know, does that ever happen? Happens to all of us. Why? Well, you're distracted. Davening is the greatest time to get everything done.
That's
right. You know, I'm saying, you plan your day, you know, can have for dinner, you review yesterday. There's only one thing it's not good for. Right, communicating with God, because, you know, like, it's so distracting. What does that mean, though? That even the davening itself, even the speaking of the words, we're able to externalize the act of saying the words of prayer from the act of prayer itself. See? You understand what I'm saying?
I mean,
I say the words, but does it reflect an emotion of the heart? Now, the idea of prayer is that it has to be an expression of the heart. But somehow, because I say the words, right, and then my mind wanders, so you could go through a whole davening without having actually communicated with God at all. Because we said the words. And it's a very big challenge. It's a huge challenge. So says Rav Hirsch that this is the idea of the danger of the externality. I'm saying it's possible with davening. It's how much more so is it possible with the symbols of Avodah and the Beit HaMikdash. It was a great danger. God said, I do not want you to bring sacrifices that are meaningless to me. And we see it happens all the time. And as long as you brought your sacrifice, you're good. Right? No, God didn't want you to just bring the sacrifice. He wanted the sacrifice to represent an internal emotion, a change in you. And if it didn't represent a change in you, then what did it really accomplish? And there's a danger in that as well. So says Rav Hirsch that that's the problem of the visual, of seeing. That we focus so much on the external that we don't realize the importance of what's internal as well. Okay, I want to share with you one other danger. The Gemara tells a very famous story, which I think is worthwhile to be aware of. Let's see if I can find it. So the Gemara says, 1 second, the Gemara says that everybody wanted to, make sure I can find it, everybody wanted to offer the Ketoret on the Beit HaMikdash. Why did all the Kohanim want to offer the Ketoret on the Beit HaMikdash? Anybody know what the merit of giving the Ketoret was? It would make you rich. Okay, 1 second. See if I can find the exact source. Okay, so the Gemara tells a very famous story. She said 21. Yeah, you know what? Can you give me the beige book, please? so I can find it. Here we are. Okay. Oh, 23. No, 21. That could be why I couldn't find it. Wrong parak. Here we are.
Wow, that's small print.
Tana Rabbanan. No, we're not. Okay. So what happened was, how would they decide who got to do the Ketoret? You're going to be shocked when I tell you how they decided who would get to be doing the Ketoret in the Beit HaMikdash. What?
Lottery?
You would think. Okay. But that's not the way it worked. Anybody want to guess? What?
The poorest.
They had a race. They were
physical running race.
A running race. Okay. Okay, one second.
That's what the Friday morning run is about. They're all getting ready for the
Ketoret. Okay. One second. Ma'aseh shayushneim shavin v'ratzim v'olim v'keves. They're running up the ramp of the Mizbeach. V'dachaf echad mehem et chaveiro. Of course, you're running up the ramp, so what did one guy do? Push his friend off. Venafal fell off. Venishbara raglo. He broke his foot. Broke his leg. Tana Ramanan. Okay. Ma'aseh b'shnei kohanim. So Gemara tells a worse story. The story of two kohanim. Shehu shneihem shavim b'ratzim v'olim b'keves. So they are running up the ramp, but it's a long run. Kadam echad mehem l'toch arba amot shel chaveiro. Okay. So one guy came within 4 amot of his friend. Natal sakin v'takalo b'libo. Everybody got that? I'll tell Chansa. He took a knife and stabbed him in the heart.
I'm not surprised.
What?
I'm not surprised.
Really?
No. There are times in history when the position of Kohen Gadol was bought and sold.
Right.
You know, it's probably, I would imagine it happened around then.
Right.
Yeah.
Amar Rabbi Tzadok amalo ta'ulam v'amar. Rabbi Tzadok stood up on the ma'alot ha'ulam, on the steps, and he said, Achenu Beit Yisrael Shim'u, my children of Israel, listen. Harehu Omer, it says, Ki yimatzei chalal v'adama, v'yatzu zikeinecha v'shoftecha. Right? When a dead person is found out in the wilderness, what do they have to do? They have to do this process called the Egla Arufa. The Egla Arufa means, right, that the elders of the communities would have to take responsibility, really, and say, we didn't cause this. Anu amil havi el arufa, al ha'ir o ha'azarot. So who's responsible here? The city or the Kohanim? Meaning, who lays blame? Go call ha'andu b'chia. So they all were crying. Can't believe this happened, they were all crying. Ba aviv shel tinok. Okay. So the father of this young Kohen came. U'mitza'o shehu miparper. The child is still like, he's not dead yet. Okay, he's like, how should we say this? What?
Dying.
He's
throes of death.
The parpare.
Like butterfly?
Yeah, he's butterfly. He's fluttering. He's fluttering. Amar hareyu kabartchem v'adayin midim is parpare. He says, hareyu kabartchem. Good news. My son is still fluttering. V'lon nisma'a sakin. Good news. The knife isn't tame yet.
What do you mean the knife isn't
tame? They're in the Beit HaMikdash. How bad would it be if the knife was tame? Let's get him out before we can make...
In other words, they're focusing on the Adam Mamakam instead of the Adam Mahavira. That sounds very Bayan-Cheney.
What?
In the Beit HaMikdash.
The Lam Dechad Shichir, yes?
I thought it was in...
Shekash Alem Taharat Kelim Yoter Mishvichut Damim. They cared more about the Tuma and the Tahara of the Kelim, of the vessels in the Beit HaMikdash, than they did about murder. And Zagara says, like, so the ritual becomes so paramount, becomes so all-encompassing, that it becomes more important than the deeper religious values. So it says that's what I think Rav Hirsch said, based on this idea. He said, V'lo yir'u, yavo lir'ot kevalat ha-kodesh v'metu. They should not see kevalat ha-kodesh, meaning if they see, they're going to focus on these externals of the ritual, on the kelim of the Beit HaMikdash, and that will bring them to a situation where God says, you know what? you care more about the aesthetic. You care more about the external than the religious value. And that would bring about shvichut damim, that part about death. So that's a drash. That's not the simple understanding. What's the simple understanding? Simple understanding is, you see it, you die. Right? Someone who sees the Aaron, he dies. Because the Aaron is a very holy thing, and the holier the thing is, the more dangerous that it is. I think that there's a message in that as well. That we treat items of great sanctity, right, with great respect. And obviously the greater the respect they have, or the greater the sanctity they have, the more dangerous they are. The more powerful they are. And powerful symbols, unless you treat them with respect, they have the ability to cause damage. You know, you sort of gave an example of like a nuclear weapon or something. There's a lot of truth to that. Right? The more powerful something is, the more dangerous it can be, and I would say in the wrong hands, or it's treated in the wrong way. And it has to be treated, covered, has to be treated with respect, has to be treated with dignity. And if that's possible, if you do that, then it exalts that item. I think Rena alluded to this. You think you alluded to the idea in Tzniut as well, which I think is a great example, right? I mean, obviously, you know that the because you cover something because it has great power to influence and to overwhelm, as opposed to the other way around. Yeah, you want to say something?
Speaking of Jesus, how he knew the names of Hashem and what he did with them.
Jesus knew the names of Hashem?
Yeah.
Yeshua knew the names of God?
Yeah, and that's he did magical things. That's how he got people.
I never heard that. Really? Anybody heard that? And the Gemara talks about certain rabbis that did, or there was
he did.
A...
He did.
I have to see that. I want you to show it to me. See if you can find it somewhere.
Okay?
Yeah.
The parochet? The
parochet.
So I got him, it went for about 15,000 shekels that year. This was many years ago. This was about 15 years ago.
Wow. Spider knew how to bid.
Right. Anyway, so we were sitting there and our mouths were open. The next year we went to an Ashkenazi shul. And they They gave Ezra, now just because it's in for this Ashkenazi, it made no difference, but it gave Shani, they gave my husband to open the He came out and he said, I don't have to pay a shekel.
Yeah, it is interesting. There's a very long story in Shmuel Aleph, a very, very long story about the Aaron, right? And it's a story of the Navi says that there's a story of a fight with the Plishtim, okay? And the Jewish people, they went out to fight with them, and they took the Aaron, Chavni and Pinchas, the sons of Eli, took the Aaron with them. Second, blah, 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 blah. Okay, and the Plishtim, for whatever reason, fought very hard. Israel. So the Plishtim fought very hard, and the Jewish people were overwhelmed. And they lost 30,000 men. I don't remember this from so long ago, right? The Aaron of God was taken. The Plishtim, when the Jewish people ran away, the Plishtim conquered the Aaron. So then they brought this Aaron to this place called Beit Dagon. It's interesting, the Plishtim treated the Aaron with great respect. They put it in their idolatry house. So the Navi says, right, they put it next to the idol. They came the next morning, the idol's on the floor. They put it next to the idol the next day, they came the next morning, the idol's again on the floor.
Wow.
Right, and the Aaron has caused them all kinds of like crazy problems. So they decided, what's the best thing they could do with this Aaron?
Carry it?
Nope.
Give it back?
Give it back to the Jews. That's exactly what they did. They gave the Aaron back to the Jews. Well, skip. Okay? They made these... They dealt in their own way. So they made these, like, golden mice. Okay? They made these, like, these pagan deities that they offered to the Aaron. And they placed it on the thing with the Aaron. Okay? One second. So the Navi says the following, Vayach ba'anshei Beit Shemesh, right? It was in Beit Shemesh. So God smote the people of Beit Shemesh, ki ra'u ba'aron Hashem. Because they saw the Aron of God. Vayach ba'am shiv'im ish, chamishim elef ish. 50,000, 70 people. Vayitablu ha'am, and the nation mourned, ki yika Hashem ba'am makah gdola. Because they had a terrible suffering. Vayamru anshei Beit Shemesh mi yuchal la'amod ifnei Hashem Elokim HaKadosh hazeh. Who can deal with this? Who can have this great holiness? So they sent messengers to Kiryat Yarim. I don't know if it's the same Kiryat Yarim as today. Everybody, you know where that is, Kiryat Yarim? Telstone, right. I don't know if it's the same. Hashivu plishtim et aron Hashem redu ha'alu oto aleichem. Right? The plishtim gave back the aron. Come, get it out of here. Vayavo anshei Kiryat Yarim vayalu et aron Hashem vayaviru oto. El Beit Aminadab Begiva, Beit Elazar Beno Kitchur Lishmor Aron Hashem. Okay? And then, so they treated it properly. So there's this idea that if you have the Aron in your midst, if you treat it appropriately, it will protect you. But if you don't treat it appropriately, it will destroy you.
Right? And it will get killed. Like they did bring it to the idolatry house and they...
The plishtim, you mean?
Yeah, they...
It's very interesting, right? Why were the plishtim not killed? So it's almost as if... Right? It's only the Jewish people who are have to be sensitive to and aware of the Kedusha, right? To them it's dangerous. But to outsiders, less so. It's very interesting. That the Jews didn't treat it appropriately. Or what do you expect of the Plishtim? How they I mean, ironically, the Plishtim in their own way did treat it respectfully. Right, they tried to. Right? They tried to offer it, you know what I'm saying? And they realized, like, we can't handle this. What's that?
We realized that we can't handle it. The people of Shemesh were Jews.
Yeah. The people of Shemesh were Jews.
And then they called who? The Kohanim?
The people of Kiryat Yarim, right. To come, these like special Kohanim, I guess they were Kohanim or whatever, mm-hmm. and they treated it appropriately. Meaning like, you have to know how to treat that which is holy, that which is sanctified. Mm-hmm. And if you don't, then you'll be punished. Yeah. Yes. Yes. Well, I would say that the Torah talks about it in that way. That because, you have a direct connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the mitzvot that you do, again, right, are of deeper meaning and of greater significance and greater value. But if you do it in God's face, it's different than if you would do it, you know, like in your bedroom, i.e., you know, Australia. Right, that's definitely true. Also, no, right, this idea... What's that? The question is, how do we take this idea of the Aron and sort of and use it in such a way? We don't have this idea of something that's in our midst that we think is necessarily dangerous as such, because we don't have that great level of Kedusha. You know, on the one hand, like the thing that I think about is that the Torah in the wrong hands is a very dangerous thing. You know what I mean? Like people who don't know how to... I'm less interested in the Karaim. I'm more interested in people who have a little bit of Torah and use it to manipulate it. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know, I think it's a very dangerous thing. You know, and it can be manipulated in great in terrible ways to justify all kinds of things. You know, in a sense, it's even more dangerous than if you don't have it at all. So what's the Kedusha and the respect? What are the Levium today of the people that have the Torah who, on the one hand, can hold it, but on the other hand, keep it covered? Keep it away. You understand what I'm saying? Meaning, learning is a very interesting thing. Because on the one hand, people who learn a little bit, they think to themselves, well, since I learned a little bit, I can now make decisions for myself. I understand the values of the Torah, and therefore, you know, this guy says this, I say that. Whereas we know that the people who have true understanding of the Torah, they understand, no, who said it before? It's like a siyag. Did somebody say it? Like a fence? Like,
yeah,
you say that?
Yeah.
That the Torah itself, on the one hand, it's great Kedusha in the home, in the household, in the Jewish people. But on the other hand, it needs protection. And without that protection, it's a very dangerous thing. But it needs protection, not only like physically, it needs protection metaphorically. And that people who don't have that, I'm speaking very abstractly. Do you understand what I'm talking about?
I don't know.
You have no idea what I'm talking about. Yeah, I was afraid of that. The Gemara says it this way. In reality, if you know enough, you could use the Torah to justify pretty much anything. And you understand that?
Yeah.
Right? You can use the Torah to justify killing someone. You could use the Torah to justify violating the Torah.
Are you talking about being a disgusting person?
You could use the Torah to justify violating the Torah. You know what I'm saying? I read an article, and it's like a polemic of mine. I'll probably blog about it. Some guy wrote an article, and he published it in the Long Island Jewish whatever, about why it's a value of the Torah to live in America. Why?
It's
a mitzvah to live in America. Why?
To make money?
No. Halavai would have said that. He said because there's a mitzvah to do chesed, to be a light unto the nations. And you can't really do that without reaching out to the nations and being a member of the nations and, you know, in America. Really?
Are you saying it has to do with how much you know, though?
I'm saying it has to do not with how much do you know, because he's right. He's right in the sense that it's a mitzvah to be a light to the nations. But only someone, like, you have to have enough knowledge to know what does it mean to be an Or LaGoyim and where are the priorities as such. Meaning, like, as you say, there's an opinion that says basically, I wouldn't say anything, but there are tremendous opinions, like in the Gemara, like this one says this and that one says that. But it could be that 99.999% of Chazal say X, and there's one minority opinion that says Y. But if I know that Y, because I could justify doing anything. I'm speaking abstractly again? No. So someone will say, well, I agree with Y, I'm going to do Y. Someone will take Y and extrapolate it and justify whatever it is I feel that I want to do. So therefore, you need Rabbanim, you need leaders who have, on the one hand, a sense of understanding of the Kedusha, but also a sense of what it means, how far you can take it and how far you can't. Because without that sense of protection, it can be extremely dangerous. Kivala et hakodesh vametu. And I think that that's something that people don't really understand, especially in today's day and age. Like, especially with like the internet in which you live in, you can know everything, right? You could learn like a tremendous amount of Torah on the internet, whereas in reality, you've learned a lot, but you also really don't know anything. Do you understand what I'm saying? I mean, you can learn a tremendous amount without having an understanding and a sense of the true nature of things, the true value of things. And the Torah was given in such a way, the Masorah was given in such a way that it has to be handed down, not just the facts and the information, but also the hierarchy of priorities and of values. And without that sense of yirah and the sense of awe and the sense of protection of the Torah, right, it's destructive. I'm more interested, interestingly, of the, how should we say, the offshoots that have deviated from what we consider mainstream Orthodox Judaism. Because it's always done in the name of the Torah. And if you look historically, Reform Judaism began as an offshoot in the name of the Torah. They started off, it really started off by saying, yes, we need to have choirs, we need to emulate the, like, instead of the old shtetl, instead of the, like, you know what I'm saying, the old Jewish way, they want to have choirs. And maybe they wanted three things. They wanted davening in another language, like in German. And they wanted to have music, because that's what the churches had. Now, you should just know, you can do those things according to halacha. Is there anything wrong with davening in English? If you want to daven in German, can you daven in German? Could you? Halachically? Are you Yotzei davening? Yes, you are. Correct. Theoretically, could you hire a non-Jew to play music for you on Shabbos? Yeah, you could, actually. Halachically, you could. For a mitzvah. So the Reforms, they did exactly that. They said, see? We're using the Torah in order to bring about. There, actually, it's a fascinating like halachic discussion. Maybe we'll do this. It's a fascinating halachic discussion about exactly this question of davening in English. And so they sent a shaila to, like, the German Jews, sent a shaila to some famous rabbi, I don't remember, in Poland, saying, may we daven in German? And he sent back a very simple thing, saying, of course you can daven in German. The Gemara says explicitly, that you could daven in another language. Until the other, like the Orthodox of Germany, had sent him a letter saying, they just used you. Because they asked a very simple question and say, oh, see, great big Rav said we could daven in German. And so he had to send a whole letter back, a whole long like notebook he sent back, a polemic back, explaining, you know, what the ramifications were, et cetera, and basically retracting what he said. Can you daven in German? Somebody can, but you can't. Why? Because what's your goal? What are you trying to do? What are you trying to accomplish? What are you really trying to do? What's underlined? Correct. And I just think back when I was in Michigan, right? There was an ongoing, you know, an ongoing tumult about like homosexuality and marriage and commitment ceremonies. You know, in America, it's very like we've lost this battle in America, in the world, Western culture. I just heard this week, majority of Americans are now not against gay marriage. That's a huge deal. A huge deal. Right? Culturally, if you're against gay marriage, you're a Neanderthal. Right. Just understand that. You're a Neanderthal. You are like behind the times. Yes, you're homophobic. You're against it. So I have a colleague, or I had a colleague in Michigan, and I don't mind saying his name because he published it. His name is Rabbi Daniel Nevins, and he wrote the tshuva explaining why the conservative movement should have commitment ceremonies between partners as long as they agree not to like engage in sexual behavior. And if you read the tshuva, this is what I think about. It's exactly this. How dangerous information is without understanding how to protect it. How dangerous the Torah can be. Because you can use it to literally justify Isurei D'Oraita and destroy the religion. And I think that that's something that we have to be aware of as well. That as much as we know, like it takes a certain sense of emunah kachamim. And this is a command by Deber Hashem Moshe Aaron Le'mor. It's a commandment to the leadership. So on the one hand, yes, the people have the burden of carrying, but you have the responsibility of instructing them in a way that is not dangerous for them. And it's a tricky line to follow. On the one hand, transmitting the Torah to the people. On the other hand, instilling in them a sense of trust that you're teaching them and that your transmission to them is within the certain sense of guidelines and framework. And I think that behooves us also. It behooves the Levium, you know, the Levium who are carrying the Aaron. They have to also trust that the Moshe and the Aaron, that they're leading them in the proper way. And I think that that's something that our generation sort of struggles with. Right? To say, well, why can't I do this? We think that we should be able to know and understand everything. And then when we don't like what it is Rabbi X tells us, then we'll go to Rabbi Y, because he'll tell us what I want to hear.
The problem is you don't have to listen. You can ask a different rabbi, do I keep 2 days
shavuos
when I'm in?
I hate to pick. That example you gave me was a tremendous example, because this idea of the second day of Yom Tov for people who come to Israel is like gone. Really. Because once one person started to do it and two people started to do it, now it's very common for people just to come for Yom Tov and not to keep the second day, which I have tremendous struggle with. Because what's going to end up happening is people are not going to do it in America either. How could I come here and not keep the 8th day of Pesach in America and then go back to and go in Israel and then I'm going to go back to America and keep the 8th day of Pesach? What? You understand what I'm saying? And what does that come from? That comes from exactly that. People ask me, well, I asked my rabbi says X, but his rabbi says Y. It's not that there's no consistency among the rabbanim. A rabbi has a right to decide and have a certain Pesach. The consistency is among the people saying, correct. Correct.
Thank you.
Not go shopping for answers.
Oh.
It's
what
people do.
That's what they do. Yes, but the fact that they don't have that common response is a problem.
What's the difference?
You mean, I don't think it's fair for Rabbanim to say all the rabbis have to have the same answer. Because it's not true.
Svardim and Ashkenaz.
Different perspectives.
We lived in London, our rabbi, Chabad rabbi, said to us, when you're in Israel, you only keep one day.
That's what he said?
Chabad.
Yeah. It's gone. That's done. I'm telling you it's done.
Personal Pesach is supposed to be, like, you're taking for that person, for all those details. So, right? You're saying, well, I understand you have this hardship, but this, and this is complicated, and so because you have all these different things, so they come to an answer. But this is, I think, the example that my mother is giving is that it's not really, I think anybody who calls Rabbi X is going to get one answer. Anybody, I don't think someone's going to say, well, I see that you're devoted to living, to Zionism, so this, so that, so because of this, I'm giving you this answer. I think if you ask any rabbi about Yom Tov Sheni, they have a consistent answer for everybody. You know what I'm saying?
I think what happened now is that people say, oh, you got a psak? That's good enough for me. You understand what I'm saying? Without even asking the rabbi, right?
But with this issue in particular, it's not dependent on a person.
What?
With this issue in particular, it doesn't depend on that person's situation, right?
Yeah.
Unless they
well, no, that's not true. That's not true. Of course it depends. Of course it depends on a person's situation. Of course it depends on a person's circumstances. Yeah. Do they own an apartment? Some rabbis say it's significant. Have they been here? Do they plan on living here? But a lot of people sort of extrapolate. Let's take it away from this particular issue because it's apparently sensitive. You know what I'm saying? But in general, I think this is exactly the thing that happens. Right? That people decide, this is the world in which we live, it's a self-legislation as opposed to a sense of emunat chachamim. Yeah, but I'm thinking it's even more than that. I would even take it, I don't think it's necessarily the problem of the people. I think it's a problem more of, the people will decide what they're going to do. It's more a problem of leadership. I have to stop. I'm way over? Why don't you tell me? It's Tammy's fault. Okay?
It's my fault.
Where's your watch? Okay. I'm going to stop now. And it behooves the leaders, the kahat, are the leaders who carry the mantle. And they have a responsibility, Moshe and Aaron have a responsibility of making sure the mantle is covered. And it's very hard in today's day and age where everything is open, to be open on the one hand, but covered all the same. And really behooves leadership to say, this psak is for you and for you only. Right? This issue is for you and for you only. And sometimes to say, right, it's my decision. And I'm not going to explain myself to you. And if you want my answer, I'll give it to you. And to make sure that people understand that if they have a respect for the halachic process, right, the respect also comes from understanding that it's not something that you can get from reading a website. It takes years of study and understanding. And rabbis have this too, right? You have to know what you can understand, what you can't. You have to know what you can pass and what you can't. And trouble comes when you think you know everything and you can pass on everything. That's when danger happens. All right, we'll stop here because I'm way over. Sorry.